Satellite.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm late getting on tonight. I'm very sorry about that. It happens a lot. I know 1 or 2 minutes is all it takes to make one wonder, listening to dead air, whether there's going to be a broadcast or not. I'm Jackie, filling in for Darren, Jackie Petru, filling in for Darren tonight. Normally, I'm on the Wednesday on the Wednesday evening time slot with Alan Watt. But welcome to Sweet Liberty. Today is Wednesday, and it is the 14th of March in the year 2006. I was all set to get on the air and had to jump up and run and check the calendar. Our spiritual message tonight, excuse me, I'm getting rid of a lot of congestion that I had with the flu that I got. And I've got some information that I'm going to share with you tomorrow night, not tonight, because I've got some stuff I want to cover on a tincture, a wonderful health-giving tincture of herbs that I've been using and that I believe have helped so much. This is from James 1, verses 2 to 4. It says, listen to this, can you thank me for trusting you with this experience, even if I never tell you why? Can you thank me for trusting you with this experience, even if I never tell you why? Do you ask why sometimes? Why something happened? Why you did something or you're not doing something? And usually, if we are alert, we find out that the universe works things out exactly the way they're supposed to be very often for our own learning experiences. I called Darren and asked him to let me do this tonight, and of course he agreed. I'll be here tonight, tomorrow night with you. Darren has to work next Monday and Tuesday. So next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I'll be with you folks. Now, what I want to talk about tonight is the avian flu. I know that this has been a big thing for a long time, and I know that Darren's done a little bit on it. Alan and I have discussed it briefly on various occasions, but I got some information. It was actually an email. I spent an entire day Saturday pulling up emails that I hadn't done in 3 weeks. I had 1,600 emails in there, and needless to say, it was quite time-consuming. But the one that I got that really got me going on this is titled, "The Bird Flu is to Hit the U.S. This Spring. Human epidemic looms, UN says. This is dated March 8th, Bloomberg Press. Listen to this. They're saying now, absolutely, yes, it's going to happen. Avian flu is likely, let me stop here. Darren and I talked today. We've got the Health Med file, which has various and sundry miscellaneous health items in it. But Darren is going to set up a section particularly for the bird flu, because this avian flu, the pandemic as they're calling it, because there's so many facets to this, that the more we understand, the more we can share with our loved ones, with our friends, with acquaintances, even people when we're out and get into conversations. The more people that know this, maybe the more lives will be saved. And I mean by people not taking vaccines that aren't going to do any good anyway. This says the bird flu is to hit the U.S. this spring. Avian flu is likely, see? Now, the headline says bird flu is to hit U.S. this spring. And the first sentence here says avian flu is likely to spread to birds in the U.S. within 6 months, and could produce an epidemic among humans at any time, said the United Nations official who monitors global efforts to fight the disease. David Nabarro told reporters in New York today that wild birds migrating over the Arctic Circle from Africa and Europe this spring would carry the H5N1 virus to Alaska. You'll notice their use of their verbs and their... what else do we have going on here? It's been a long time since I've been in, excuse me, in English. But first they say it's likely to, then they say it's going to. When you're reading articles, watch for this, folks. But they said that these birds that are coming, migrating over the Arctic Circle from Africa and Europe will carry, it says they would carry the H5N1 virus to Alaska, and that avian flu would probably reach America's lower 48 states 6 months later. This is the first time a top global health official has predicted when birds carrying the flu will arrive in the U.S. Every country in the world now needs to have its veterinary services on high alert for H5N1 to be sure that they're not caught unawares, said Nabarro. He's a physician with the World Health Organization, folks, who's a senior UN system coordinator for avian and human influenza. The flu strain, which has spread across Asia, Africa, and Europe. You know how many? I was in a website, a government website, last night. There's been like 49 cases. They're claiming 49 cases of bird flu. But this says that the flu strain, which has spread across Asia, Africa, and Europe. Now, I'm telling you, this website, in fact, it was a Health and Human Services website. They list the countries where it showed up. And if I'm not mistaken, there's a total in all of these countries of 49 cases that they're saying was bird flu. But this one says it has spread across Asia, Africa, and Europe, and is currently raging through poultry farms in Nigeria, the most populous nation on a continent ravaged by poverty and HIV/AIDS. Health authorities are concerned that the virus is taking root in Africa, where it threatens to infect humans, as it has in Asia and the Middle East, and possibly mutate into a deadly pandemic form. Avian flu infected at least 31 people in the first 2 months of this year, killing 20 of them, according to WHO. That's twice as many cases and fatalities reported compared with the same 2 months of 2005. This report says, folks, that the virus has killed at least 96 of 175 people infected since late 2003. Sooner or later, there will be a pandemic. Nabarro said, there will be a pandemic. Now, folks, we have to know that if they are predicting and saying absolutely there will be and there is, we know it's man-made. Period. Numero said that there will be a pandemic sooner or later. It could mean any time. We have a virus capable of replicating inside humans. We have a virus that humans are not resistant to. We have a virus about which we don't understand everything. It is at this stage of a pandemic alert that we have the luxury of being able to be prepared. You see the fear-mongering going on? U.S. Health Secretary Michael Leavitt, from his former governor of Utah, told the Senate committee March 1st that H5N1 virus might spread to the U.S. soon. The virus appearance is just a matter of time, he said. It may be very soon. Now listen to this about Nigeria. The Nigeria government this week distributing compensation payments to farmers affected by the virus, which has spread in the past 2 months to almost a third of the country's 36 states. International aid organizations are counting on the payments to spur more culling and to help stem the trade of infected poultry. Containing avian outbreaks in oil-rich Nigeria's Delta region on the Atlantic coast may be complicated by kidnappings and attacks that forced Royal Dutch Shell PIC's Nigerian joint venture to halt crude oil output. Maybe they're going to start a pandemic there since it's an oil-rich area. We'll keep our ears open about that, won't we? There have been no reported human cases of avian flu in Nigeria, the government said. Then it goes down to say that there were two cats in Germany that had it, and the German government has ordered cat owners in areas affected to keep their pets indoors. The U.S. government plans to test almost eight times as many wild birds this year as in the past decade to protect against the spread of bird flu. They said starting in April, samples from as many as 100,000 birds will be tested, mainly in Alaska. So there's fear, fear, fear. Now here's one that was just, I think Dennis posted it on our website at Sweet Liberty just today. It's a short one. Listen to this. Don't count on a vaccine to protect against bird flu during the first 6 months of a pandemic. My, my, my. Don't count on a vaccine to protect against bird flu during the first 6 months of a pandemic. Health and Human Service Secretary Mike Leavitt said Monday, it will take at least that long to produce a vaccine because the virus is changing and there's no way to know which strain might become capable of human-to-human transmission. Or, folks, truth be known, if it ever would at all. As a result, the government will have to maintain stockpiles of vaccine against each of the main H5N1 strains circulating the globe. There's another interesting article that'll be posted there when Darren gets it finished. And I was telling him today it was Cheney. It's Donald Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld still owns a lot of stock in the company LaRoche, I believe it is. LaRoche, I'm not sure how it's pronounced. The guy's getting filthy rich. Tens of million dollars of rich with the Tamiflu things that they're stockpiling now. Folks, it's a money-making scheme. It is fear-mongering. And if there is a, quote, pandemic, an outbreak, we can bet on it. Probably never be able to prove it, but it's man-made. It's all man-made. There's no way that they know how that thing is going to mutate itself. And in another article that I'll share with you, basically what they admit is that if they made a flu shot, even if it took them 6 months to get it ready, by the time they're ready to inject it, that virus actually mutates within the human body. And the way I read it, it looks like they'd have to have a special flu shot for every single person because they have no idea how it's going to mutate. So do you see the insanity of this? And do you see the evil, insidious, fear and chaos that they're causing with this thing. And it'll turn out to be that the vaccines themselves are the ones that would spread disease, whatever live virus is in the vaccine, that whatever they come up with. So, this article I was reading from, it says once the particular strain is identified, it'll take time to ensure that a vaccine is safe and to mass produce it. If we have a person-to-person transmissible virus, this is a quote from Governor Leavitt for Health and Human Services now. He said, if we have a person-to-person transmissible virus and we enter a pandemic condition, we will be operating without a vaccine for the first 6 months. We will be dependent on traditional public health measures to contain and limit it. Leavitt updated reporters Monday on what the federal government is doing to monitor and prepare for bird flu. A report he released noted that the virus had spread from 16 countries to about 37 countries in a span of about 4 months. That's an outright lie. According to the graph I saw, or the chart that I saw, they only list about 8 or 9 countries on that chart, folks. Leavitt said the federal government, of course, they, you know what? They don't count on people doing any research, the masses. And that's why we have a responsibility. For those of us who are learning about these things, we have a responsibility to wake up as many people to the lies as possible, because we can't count on them caring enough to even take the time to do any research, folks. Leavitt said that the federal government is operating under the assumption that an infected bird will be found in the U.S. by the fall. He stressed that people should not be overly concerned once a sick bird is found. So the U.N. official is saying that it's going to be here by spring, and this article says it's going to be here by the fall. As long as it is a bird disease, it is not a crisis, he said. Scientists are concerned the virus could mutate and become contagious among people. Could mutate. Currently, people have only been infected after close contact with sick birds. HHS, Human Health Service officials, have held 23 bird flu summits throughout the country to emphasize the need for state and local communities to take the threat seriously and to begin preparations for a pandemic. Leavitt said his top bird flu concern was the ability of the government to get medicine quickly into the hands of the people who need it. Now, you see the contradictions in here, folks? And I want you to think about this, too. They're holding these summits all over the country. They're bringing all this information to local, city officials, state officials. Do you think that any of those elected officials bother to do any research on this? You can bet your bottom dollar that they don't. So they'll just believe everything that they're told. And I would say that it would be a good idea, too, to get the email address of your state legislator, state senator, state rep. Get the email address of your U.S. congressman. I know it sounds futile, but you know what? The more people that they hear from, the more they know that there's a lot of people who are waking up to their lies. And maybe that would help to prevent some of whatever it is, the hell it is that they have planned. So anyway, the top concern, of course, is getting the medicine quickly into the hands of people who need it. Those are the ones that'll die. Doing anything millions of times is hard. Doing it fast makes it even more difficult, he said. I wonder who gave him that quote. He also said he was worried about how the country would handle a surge in demand for health care. It will need to be the focus of the individual community planning, because every community's surge will be handed down differently, he said. That's the end of that article. It's a short one. But you hear the contradiction? You hear the contradictions already? The one that I wanted to share with you here comes from a website, and I will ask Darren also to link this in our link section, and also probably in the section where this article is going to be posted, because it comes from a website called The Doctor Within, and this is written by somebody named Kim Shea, but it's a holistic medicine and natural health, and it just looked like a really wonderful website in itself. So this is titled The Pandemic That Will Never Be. And I'm going to start reading this to you. It says, you don't have to be a master intellect to divine the conspicuous lack of scientific consistency in the recent hysteria surrounding avian flu to which we are being daily subjected. Really doesn't add up, does it? Honestly, how can anyone seriously believe what we're being told? Avian flu is caused by a distinct new virus, H5N1. It's a real threat. 60 people have died worldwide from it. So therefore, 30% of the world's population is in danger of extinction. You know, I've read articles where they're predicting that up to 55 million people could die, folks. You know, that it's got to scare people. And you know what it'll scare people into doing? It'll scare them into taking those doggone vaccines or the Tamiflu, which I guess is in pill form. Excuse me. They also are telling us that millions of birds have died from it, and soon it will mutate to a human form, that drugs and vaccines will save us. The threat is imminent. There's no time to lose. He says it's no wonder most people believe these erroneous notions. Who's going to inform them otherwise? That's right, folks. Who's going to inform them otherwise unless it's us? The articles trying to expose avian flu as a scam seem more hysterical and less factual than the actual media propaganda promoting it. So once again, this website must set the record straight by careful consideration of the fundamental argument. The difference will be that in this chapter, all sources will be cited. And at the end of this, he's got about 20 or 30 different sources where his information came from, folks. It says, what are we being set up for? What are they selling now? Some background may be helpful. If you've never considered the way media work in the first place, perhaps the chapter entitled The Doors of Perception would be helpful. And I think that's an article on his website, The Doors of Perception. Well-worn script. Historical content is certainly relevant. Avian flu is right on schedule with the winding down of the post-911 smallpox vaccine and SARS vaccine program. In these two instances, appropriate hysteria was whipped up, billions were spent, and magically, poof, both threats disappeared. Remember the West Nile virus, folks? Heck, that was, what, 7, 8, 9 years ago? I don't know how long ago. You know, there was never any proof, ever, 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 any proof that any birds had what was called West Nile virus. But you know what they did? They used that to justify spraying poisonous chemicals over the cities. Malathion, they doused people in the cities with terrible, terrible damaging chemicals. I remember the Malathion specifically in New York, because I got Malathion here. I've used it a long time ago when I got spider mite. And they tell you to wear a mask, take it outdoors if you're going to spray it. And if you can't take it outdoors, you've got to open all your windows and use a fan. In other words, do not inhale it. Put a mask on. And they sprayed it over the people in New York that year. And I think they sprayed some of the cities here in Pennsylvania, too. So, we had the West Nile virus, we had SARS, and smallpox. Nature abhors a vacuum, I'm reading again. New funding requires new threats. Ergo, we need avian flu to take up the slack. As for the marketing, it's already in place. Why change a successful sales strategy? In the fall of 2005, the identical techniques by which SARS and smallpox vaccines terrorized the American psyche were trotted out again, this time to sell avian flu. Create hysteria by incessant media ops, painting a picture of Armageddon, short on science, long on unsupported overstatements and stock phrases that are repeated and repeated. A constant stream of predictions from, quote, scientific forces who have done no actual studies, but instead reinterpret old material. Offer a solution, an expensive solution involving unproven old medicines and untested new ones. Spend the money. Never mention the threat again. Well, this time it may be different. And, you know, Alan was saying, I got his comments for that first article I read you. And what he was saying is that the symptoms of flu, that they're saying that the avian flu, he said it's too close for comfort to what the symptoms of the Spanish flu was. And he believes that if there is a pandemic, it will be the Spanish flu. Second, I'm sorry. I think I sprained my wrist tonight. Molly was running down the hall. She wanted to go outside and chase a critter out of the yard, and she knocked my feet right out from under me, and I jammed my wrist up against the wall when I fell, and boy, it hurts. I was just rewrapping it here. So here's the backstory. This is the article. He says, let's start with what the World Health Organization says. The World Health Organization is a political body that has been around since 1948, made up of 192 member countries, or more accurately, the ministers of health from 192 countries now. The ministers of health are all bureaucrats, aren't they? And they go to these meetings, and they do whatever they're told to do when they get to the meeting. They're just front pieces, aren't they, folks? He says their main task is to hold annual meetings in order to figure out what their stance on various health issues should be, and also what they should do with their vast annual budget of $1.1 billion. You know, when these meetings are held, you can kind of, in your imagination, go behind the scenes. The outcome is already, whatever their plan is, it is already planned. And all these health ministers do is rubber stamp whatever the global plan is. It's not difficult to see that WHO's idea of health is anything but holistic ideals stated in their charter and can be reduced to a single blanket notion that the diseases of the world are cured by one remedy only, pharmaceutical drugs. This axiom is pervasive all through the voluminous administrative and socio-political verbiage extruding from their entire website, lip services paid to side issues like clean water and nutrition, but overall, the message is clear. Good health requires a ton of drugs. We've had our one-minute warning here, and we're going to take a couple-of-minute break, folks, and I'll be back with you after this. And I hope you're listening to this. Sometimes it's easier to read something than to hear it read. I wanted to read it to you tonight in case some of you are just not inclined to follow up and read this. I think it's important that we know about this stuff. We'll be back after this. Well, maybe not. Maybe I thought I heard a warning.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you read the history books, the most often asked question to Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War from the Old Paths Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free? Or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it, it has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen, there's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty, to ourselves and to our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188. Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net, around the world and on satellite.
Okay, we're back. We've got 30 minutes left here, folks, and I don't know if I'll get through this whole thing, but this is important enough that I wanted you to hear it. We're going to continue here. So what he said is that lip service is paid to side issues at the World Health Organization, like clean water and nutrition. But overall, the message is clear. Good health requires a ton of drugs. WHO's vision of health limits itself to a study of infectious and deficiency diseases, whose solution is always the same, more drugs. Even after cursory review of WHO documents, it's difficult to see WHO as anything but an agent for the global pharmaceutical industry. As a media agency themselves, who strives to be very topical and current in their week-to-week focus. So, of course, they have a lot of info on avian flu these days. From the current WHO frequently asked question sheet, FAQ, on avian flu, it says avian influenza, or bird flu, is a contagious disease caused by viruses that normally infect only birds. Avian influenza viruses are highly species specific, but have on rare occasions crossed the species barrier to infect humans. On rare occasions. And yet, folks, they're predicting the pandemic worldwide, and up to 55 million people can die. they rarely cross species barriers to infect humans. In domestic poultry, it says, infection with avian influenza viruses causes two main forms of disease, distinguished by low and high extremes of virulence. The so-called low pathogenic form commonly causes only mild symptoms, ruffled feathers, a drop in egg production, and may easily go undetected. The highly pathogenic form is far more dramatic. It spreads very rapidly through poultry flocks, causes disease affecting multiple internal organs, and has a mortality rate that can approach 100%, often within 48 hours. And the author here says rare occasions, very rare as we will see. And how is it that the two main forms of the disease represent low and high extremes of virulence? Very convenient for science, certainly, but nature is seldom that accommodating. Virulence generally occurs across a range, not just in two polar opposite. There are no sources are cited for these, quote, findings. I was just going to get a little aside here. I remember reading about a terrible bird flu that hit, I don't know how long ago, but I guess it killed a lot of poultry, domestic birds. And this was when I was reading about the effectiveness of peroxide in the drinking water. And according to the reports I read, any poultry farmers who used the peroxide in the drinking water, their birds did not get sick. That's just something for you to know, store away someplace. So anyway, the WHO information continues here. It says the current outbreaks of highly pathogenic avian influenza, which began in Southeast Asia in mid-2003, are the largest and most severe on record. Never before in the history of this disease have so many countries been simultaneously affected, resulting in the loss of so many birds. It may be true and it may not. The causative agent, the H5N1 virus, has proved to be especially tenacious. Despite the death or destruction of an estimated 150 million birds, the virus is now considered endemic in many parts of Indonesia and Vietnam. And the author says, right here is where propaganda creeps in. Causative agent, H5N1 is an unproven theory, not the known cause. Figures of 100 or 150 million dead birds are common in today's media stories. Where are these figures coming from? Unfounded speculation. But even if such figures were true, which is not likely, where is the evidence that this particular virus was the cause? Again, wild speculation, but as we will see, speculation that is calculated towards a specific end. The more birds, the scarier it is, the better the story. The master stroke, stating that this new virus killed 150 million birds with no clinical proof. How many were cultured to H5N1? Today, any bird dies anywhere is likely to be counted in the flu figures. The WHO goes on to tell us that in 2003-04, scientists found H5N1 viruses in the poultry of 8 Asian nations. And since most of the tested birds were dead, the inference is that the virus killed them. But there's no proof they died from the virus. Each bird would have had to be cultured to know that. Now, since WHO lists no Asian countries in which no birds were found with the virus, maybe this virus is common in normal birds. In other words, anywhere they looked for the virus in birds, they found it. And most of the subjects were dead, since they're much easier to catch. Anybody ever think of all this? Such single-mindedness of reporting suggests a predetermined agenda. And the WHO plods on. This is quoting, in the current outbreak, laboratory-confirmed human cases have been reported in 4 countries, Cambodia, Indonesia, Thailand, and Vietnam. Hong Kong has experienced outbreaks in the past. In 1997, in the first recorded instance of human infection with H5N1, the virus infected 18 people and killed 6 of them. In early 2003, the virus caused 2 infections with 1 death in a Hong Kong family with a recent travel history to southern China, end quoting. And the author says, outbreak? Why are they using that word? What is this, a Dustin Hoffman movie? There's no outbreak. We're talking about 18 deaths in a part of the world that has 1.8 billion people. And it's a non-Netflix, non-Lexus SUV part of the world. Some of the poorest areas in the world, poor hygiene, poor nutrition, many people tenuously holding on to life by the thinnest margin. Tens of thousands of people die from regular old-fashioned flu every year in that same area. And there's no cure for that either, except a vaccine that most can't afford, which is just as well, because it doesn't work anyway. But no one's kicking up a storm of hysteria about regular flu, because there's already a product being marketed for that. Avian flu is the new market. New markets need new promo. Big promo. Next, frequently asked question from WHO. How serious is the current pandemic risk? It says, quote, each additional human case gives the virus an opportunity to improve its transmissibility in humans and thus develop into a pandemic strain. And the author says, another masterful marketing touch, using the word current and pandemic together. But really, just using pandemic at all was brilliant. It's the word all media have picked up on and won't let go of. Try this. Google bird flu pandemic and watch your RAM overload. What does pandemic mean? Pandemic means a worldwide epidemic, with the implication being that millions can be affected and theoretically die. And that is the true hallmark of any high-end marketing program, theoretical death. The 60 people who supposedly have died from suspected avian flu, even if that were the cause of their death, it's quite a stretch from 60 to a situation where 2 billion people are dying. But these are the actual figures cited in many of the stories appearing in popular press, which are telling us how bad a real pandemic might be. 30% of the world's population. What does this have to do with the actual numbers of verified deaths from avian flu? Same motivation. As usual, marketing cures, marketing of cures. No matter who says what, avian flu bears not the slightest resemblance to anything that could remotely be described as pandemic, nor is it likely to. At present, with the exception of 60 cases in 8 years and 6 billion people, it only affects birds, remember? There's no pandemic, epidemic, or mini-demic among humans, and no amount of media repetition can make it so. And then he's got a section here on the flu epidemics in 1918. That was the Spanish flu. In 1957, which was, I think, wasn't it that the swine flu? In 1968. He says, comparing avian flu projected deaths to the numbers in earlier flu epidemics, again, is absurd, speculative, and unscientific. Excuse me, and unnecessarily sensational for several reasons. No one knows how far any current version of the flu will spread. The current version of the avian flu has only been verified in a very few cases. In most cases that are now being counted as avian flu, the causative agent has not been identified because no cultures were done. Often no distinction is made between verified cases and suspected cases. And yet, we continue to see this comparison technique employed every few days as new stories come out. We should learn to use it as a matter of a marker to designate spurious writing. Such an attempted comparison between the current avian flu and 1918 or 1957 epidemics impeaches anything else asserted in the same articles. One witness to the 1918 flu epidemic wrote an entire book documenting how the deaths occurred, more from the vaccines and infections than from any actual virus-borne disease. She observed that it was the unvaccinated who remained healthy during the entire two-year period of the epidemic. Did you catch that, folks? And I've read other reports. It wasn't just a book that was written. There are other reports that verify that, that the people who got sick and died during the Asian flu outbreak were the people that took the flu shots. This is titled The Calculated Hysteria of Media. People are naturally complacent and unconcerned about what does not directly affect them. They need to be shocked into compliance with any new mass program, whether it's a war, mass inoculation, or the newest security game. The persuasive techniques of Edward L. Bernays have been well learned indeed. To that end, media will paint the grimmest possible scenario, quoting the most frightening statistics and darkest predictions from any available source, no matter how irresponsible or unfounded. The purpose of media is to sell media. Well, the purpose of media goes beyond that, doesn't it, folks? The purpose of media is to brainwash and dumb down the population. As we watch the avian flu show being crafted into existence with billions in the balance in drugs, vaccines, and regulation, no expenses being spared to conjure up the most enormous disaster the world has ever faced. It's as though no one wants to be accused of underestimating the magnitude of the impending catastrophe. Some examples, and these are quotes from certain people, and he's got the, he doesn't name each of the people that made the quote, but they're all listed in the references at the end of this article. An advisor from Homeland Security, Richard Falkenrath, recently called avian flu a bigger threat than terrorism. Here's another quote. Whether or not this particular virus makes the final mutation that allows it to move from human to human, one day some virus will. And Representative Nita Lowey of New York said, this is a national emergency. Here's another quote. The world is on edge, stalked by a virus that travels the great migratory flyways and kills where it lands. The fate of the world hung in the balance. Another quote, the single greatest risk in our world today, what happens when the global economy shuts down? Another quote, Senator Arlen Specter, Pennsylvania, could we have acted sooner to avoid the situation we are in now, in effect running for cover? And Margaret Chan from World Health Organization said this is the first time we've been able to see, listen to this, folks, this is the first time we've been able to see a pandemic unfold before our very eyes. That's the end of the quoting, and the author says, what pandemic? What are these sources talking about? There's no pandemic at this time. Where's the voice of reason in all this shrill delirium? Why is the majority of sources in the media, as well as the government regulators and U.S. Congress, all signing on board the same sinking ship of junk science, illusion, and hyperbole? Wait just a minute here. Could it just be the money behind avian flu? As with the marketing of smallpox vaccine in 2002 and the marketing of SARS in 2003, it's a fairly safe bet the threat of avian flu will disappear as soon as the money has been spent stockpiling the drugs and vaccines. That's the usual pattern. Count on it. Well, you know what? I'd rather see that happen than to see them cause an outbreak, to actually let something loose that they sure as heck could do in the chemtrails, couldn't they? The two remedies for avian flu being hawked daily from every quarter are Tamiflu and a new flu vaccine. Let's look behind the scenes a little and see whose money is on the line here and who would benefit from the sale of enough of these drugs for the entire world. First, Tamiflu. No matter who says what, avian flu bears not the slightest resemblance to anything that could remotely be described as pandemic, nor is it likely to. At present, with the exception of 60 cases in 8 years and 6 billion people, it only affects birds, remember? There's no pandemic, epidemic, or mini-demic among humans. And no amount of media repetition can make it so. The 1996 two drug giants, Hoffman and LaRoche. Oh, Hoffman LaRoche, that's one company, and Gilead Sciences agreed to split the world between them. Gilead had invented a new drug, a new type of flu drugs called neuraminidase inhibitors, which included Tamiflu. The deal was that LaRoche would research and market the drug world, and Gilead would be paid residuals forever. They split the world between them, folks. From 1997, Gilead Sciences, located in Foster City, California, joined the NASDAQ 100 in 2001. Its 2004 revenues were only $1.3 billion, but that's about to change. From 1997 until the time he was sworn in as Secretary of Defense in 2001, guess who had been chairman of the board of Gilead Sciences? Donald Rumsfeld. You don't believe it? Good. Look at the Department of Defense website. At present, Rumsfeld continues to receive stock and benefits from Gilead and is a major shareholder. And remember that Rumsfeld, well, maybe he's going to talk about this. Another member of Gilead's board of directors is George Shultz, whom you may remember as Secretary of Treasury under Nixon, one of the financial directors of the Vietnam War. Shultz is still technically alive. So how does the financial future of Gilead appear with sales of Tamiflu? Best of estimates at present, between $1 to $1.8 billion, and that's just for the U.S. market. Such a figure would double Gilead's total income for 2004, just for one drug. Taking the global market into consideration, sales revenue from Tamiflu is virtually unlimited, a sacred word for investors. The U.S. Senate approved $3.9 billion for Tamiflu purchases back in September 2005 with virtually no discussion. And you better believe, folks, that when they pass something like that, there's a lot of money passing hands of these elected officials voting this stuff in. Taking the global market into consideration, sales revenue from Tamiflu, But the best news for investors is that the Tamiflu windfall would be around for a long time. Again, from the WHO FAQ sheet, it says, quote, at present, manufacturing capacity, which has recently quadrupled, it will take a decade to produce enough oseltamivir to treat 20% of the world's population. And the author says that oseltamivir is Tamiflu. He says, keep asking yourself, who would benefit from the threat of pandemic? Wasn't it Rumsfeld, who was the board of directors of Sierra? And then he got on the FDA, the board of the FDA, and pushed through aspartame, folks. He made a mint off that, too. Up until that time, the FDA would not approve aspartame. And I'm pretty sure it was Rumsfeld who got on the board and got it pushed through. Alexander Fleming, voice from the grave. Drugs that kill viruses have been the holy grail of modern medicine ever since Fleming's invention of penicillin in the mid-1940s. Penicillin initially saved so many lives because for the first time we had a drug that could kill a broad spectrum of bacteria in the human body. But for all these years since, they could never pull the virus rabbit out of the same hat. No matter what the boys in PR name their drugs, there have never been drugs that take care of viruses the way antibiotics originally could kill bacteria. And that's always been the problem with colds and flu. Most of them are viral, as everyone knows. Antibiotics don't work with flu. If you take antibiotics every time you get the flu, you're building your body's resistance to antibiotics. So if you ever have a life-threatening infection, they won't work. Fleming warned us this would be the result of irresponsible, cavalier overprescription, but we didn't listen. We're just about out of time here. Oh, he says, so, is there really such a thing as a drug that kills viruses? Can Tamiflu really do what they claim it does? I'm going to finish this up tomorrow night, and I'm pretty sure I'll be able to do it. And Alan will be back with us, maybe not tomorrow night, but we've got all next week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And I wanted to mention this to you when he's talking about antibiotics. Garlic is a wonderful antibiotic, and the body doesn't build up a tolerance to it. You can get in your health food stores, you can get garlics that are very, very potent, very concentrated. And that would be something that you would want to have in your medicine cabinet, folks, or on your vitamin shelf. I don't take garlic all the time, but if I feels like something's trying to catch me, that's when I start taking it in. Although a lot of people just take it as a type of a maintenance thing. But that's the wonderful thing about it, is that you don't have to worry about building up a resistance to it. It's God's stuff is what it is. And if you are coming down with something, you can't OD on garlic. And so you can always double up on the dosage that you're taking over and above or triple up what the bottle tells you to take. That makes sense, doesn't it? And I think we're just about out of time here tonight. I didn't want to... Well, maybe we've got a couple minutes left here. He says the problem is with Tamiflu. Tamiflu was approved by the FDA November 2000, November 20th. The manufacturer made extravagant claims about its effectiveness from the outset. And this is a quote. The result of several clinical studies showed that Tamiflu is up to 92% effective in preventing influenza illness in adolescents, adults, and the elderly when taken daily. And Gilead also claims that Tamiflu is the first antiviral pill effective against all common strains of flu that can safely protect people who are in close contact with someone who has the flu. And we are out of time for folks, I think. The author says, not surprisingly,
record budget deficits, bankruptcies galore, and the U.S. dollar is at an all-time low. With